Welcome to Inspired After Hours, your unique peek into the untold narratives of business leaders. We don't just talk business, we journey through their world, personal stories, and unique perspectives. Here we delve beyond corporate facades for intimate conversations that reveal the real life experiences of those who inspire us. Get ready to discover wisdom, extract life lessons, and fuel your own journey. Welcome to Inspired After Hours. So welcome to Inspired After Hours, business leaders off the clock. And today we have Erin Baer, the long-awaited guest who kept getting COVID.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Lunch.
Erin, we do the awkward few seconds of sip. I want to do that.
Hey.
Go ahead and do the awkward few seconds of sip. So there is so much to you. So much to you.
Not really.
There's so much to you that I actually have to read it from my phone, but we know you're a renowned speaker. You wrote a book, Exponential Theory.
What makes you renowned? Shannon. First, what makes you renowned?
Renowned is just,
it's a really good word.
It's a word that really elevates you.
Thank you.
And lets people know immediately that there's someone that they need to see speak.
We'll see.
I like the word. I can't.
We'll find out. Your audience will figure it out soon enough.
And so, okay, you've got passion for fitness and health and longevity, and we're going to hear a lot about that because we talked about that a little bit, and that's very interesting. You have an adventurous spirit, I've heard. You'll have to tell us what that means.
I don't know what that means, but I would think so, yeah.
You've traveled to 100 countries in every state in the United States. Is this true?
For sure, yeah. I'm a travel. I was on a long checklist. I don't know. I had some evil spirit just keep driving me to go to another place. So, but no, it just kind of happened over my life. That's what happens when you get old. And then when you get old, you think about longevity. And
how do you know health. That? You're not old.
Yeah, I'm
you're just getting started.
I'm in the first half century of my life.
Let's put it that way.
I'm still in the first half century of my life.
So surfing, skiing, sailing. But there's another thing that people might not know about you, which is that you do stand-up comedy.
I do.
And I know there's more. There's a lot more.
Likely is more.
There has to be more. Otherwise,
there's more to all of us.
Have any money because none of this pays the bills.
Yeah, I do a lot of advising to different companies, and I've done a lot of strategy and innovation facilitation. Has been my career over my life. So I've worked with really big companies like Coca-Cola and Daimler, and facilitated at the board level and senior leadership all over the world. And that's what led me to all these different countries. So. That's the serious side of me. And in that, I find a lot of humor in it because everybody takes things so seriously, but you actually accomplish things when you're having fun, living, laughing, and learning, right?
Yeah.
So
definitely.
Let's do that today.
Yeah, we're going to do that. So Venture Cafe Phoenix.
Yeah.
And I know there's venture cafes all over the country, right? So
all over the world.
So did you start that or was that a rumor?
I was there when it started. So I was hired by Maricopa Community Colleges during COVID to kind of create this, how do we engage people back? And it took a while to get people back into this venture cafe model. We originally started with a model called Collide, which was like the bioscience models. How do you collide people? And, we had an ambassador program and some of the things that they have now that are different than venture cafe corporate. So, I'd say my imprint is on Venture Cafe, and I was there and really helped focus hey, I think we should be a franchise of Venture Cafe and really kind of grow it from there. And it's unbelievable event. I know you guys go a lot and, there's 200 to 400 people every week kind of networking and learning about different topics. And, it's proud.
Free drink.
Yeah. Two free drinks, 5 to 7, it's free parking. Yeah. 2 free drinks, 5 to 7, free parking. Every Thursday in Phoenix, Arizona. So you can't really beat it. And, my comedy partner and business partner, Forbes, is the MC and host there. And, it keeps me coming back and keeps me learning and growing. And I think they've done an incredible job to grow it. In fact, they won awards from Venture Cafe Global of what they've done. And, just excited to see it kind of continue on. And, I'd like to have it as a little part of my legacy. Tom Schumann, who was part of Maricopa Community Colleges, really was the impetus for hiring me to kind of help with that. So excited to be part of that for sure.
Yeah. So why do people ask you to do things like that? And you said that you're on the board of Blue Zone
Tell me what it was.
Blue Zones. Yeah.
Blue Zones.
So I'm a strategic advisor.
Why do people ask you to do these things? Because you're renowned.
Yeah, because I'm renowned. You know, literally I had this conversation today. I was like, why do people keep asking me to do things that, like, I don't know that I know a lot about these things, but I think it's part of what you see is I have a creative point of view and perspective on life. And I hope to share that in this podcast. And, you know, I have this book, Exponential Theory, that I wrote with Forbes Shannon, who was a former guest, that really kind of explains, like, I do think bigger about things. So when I meet people, my goal is for your audience, as well as you too, is kind of like, how can we think bigger about what we're doing? How can we think, you know, about how we can impact the world in a little bigger way than we did yesterday? And I think, you know, the law of attraction or whatever you want to say is people that like that kind of bring it in to existence. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty cool that you wanted to be on our podcast to talk about that. And I'm very interested to understand a little bit more about exponential theory. Yeah. And that book is very complicated. Yeah. And you guys did it.
I'll
and it was you and Forbes who wrote that book, right?
Mm-hmm.
And did you have any outside help?
No, that was Forbes and I. Just we had people review it. You know, we had the Yale librarian review it and some other people to kind of give us. But as I was sharing kind of before we started taping, you know, that was, first day was 2020. So it had a lot of time on my hands. I was a global facilitator. So I was traveling around the world, facilitating boards and senior leadership teams through strategic planning and initiatives around innovation. So I would take like Daimler's, you know, level ones or level twos or their board members to Tel Aviv, Singapore, Shanghai, all these different places. And then we would tour the innovation ecosystem. And then we would say, what can we take back home? And I would facilitate that. So that experience is what really loaded that book with lots of material, because that's all the things that I thought about for literally 10, 15 years. I was doing that. I was traveling around the world doing that. And when COVID happened, like, my life shut down. And instead of like saying, oh no, you know, what am I going to do? I said, this is the perfect opportunity to write that book. And ironically, Forbes as well was working in the hospitality industry. He was a student of mine. And he just kept kind of showing up in my life and just saying, hey, can you mentor me? And he finally came around. He said, I'm going to write that book, you know? And so we ended up launching into writing this book. And, you know, it literally, I said, you know, if we're going to do it, we're going to write an ebook in 2 days. We're going to launch it. We're going to start selling it. And this was March like 25th. And by March 27th, we had Innovate During Crisis, an ebook. Wow. And started selling that on Amazon because it was like one of the first crisis innovation books.
What a way to jump on the wave, right? Like, I think there's so many moments where there's a situation happening and people see an opportunity to do something like that. But you are clearly a momentum person, a person of activation and action, because that was pretty early on into COVID.
No,
and the fact that you actually punched it out in 2 days.
Yeah, I'm a doer, and you know, I think I shocked Forbes, and then we started selling them, and he's like, "Oh wow!" Like, you know, in his own mind, and that, you know, I won't talk for him, but you know, our journey is being documented now in a screenplay that we're writing. That's going to be really, really.
I mean, that's renowned.
Yeah.
When your journey is being documented on a screenplay, that's renowned.
We're writing it, so it's not like someone else is like, "Hey, these two interesting guys, we're going to document their lives." It's the fact that we did notice that we took an interesting journey, and part of it was this first meeting that we had as a pivotal point of the screenplay. And I met with them, and, you know, the reality is everyone took me really serious. And everyone's like, he's like, everyone takes me as a joke. So I said, well, I want more of that. And he's like, well, I want to be taken more serious. I want to be a professional writer. And in that moment, we started kind of growing what I would say is our own belief system in that we could even do that for each other. You know, as mentor mentee, but both ways, like as him being a mentor in a different way. And I think that's the other thing I would express to everyone is like every person that crosses your path can teach you a lot.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I've learned more from Forbes than he's ever learned from me, and I will challenge him on that. But I think part of that process was us really understanding, like, you know, I put out and I said, you know, in our book, there's this thing about Elon Musk that put out this, you know, hey, I'm going to create the Roadster, and then I'm going to create this expensive luxury model, and then I'm going to drive down the price. And, you know, 2020, he kind of, that was a 2006, so 14 years in the making. He literally created this model and said, this is what I'm going to do. So I said, Forbes, we're going to write this book, and this is going to be in our book. And that was kind of one of the theses in our book. I said, let's do that for us. What are we going to do? And I said, we're going to write a book in 2 days, and then we're going to write, self-publish a book, and we're going to sell a few thousand copies. Then we're going to get attention of a New York publisher, which we wrote a book called Reimagine Innovation Next, which was 9 chapters. And then we sold a couple thousand copies of that. And then we got the attention of a New York publisher. And then we sold over 100,000 copies of Exponential Theory already. And that whole process was then, and his goal and his dream was to write a screenplay and a TV show and some other things. I was like, then we'll be able to do that. And that process is what we're in. We're now writing that screenplay. You know, he's actually doing some stuff. He's written probably 6 or 7 other books along the way. And it's just been an interesting process for his growth as well as my growth. And I would say it's intertwined in a lot of ways because it's totally redirected my career from being a professor and a facilitator to now doing comedy shows, writing a screenplay. I mean, I'm still writing books and writing articles and different things and still advising, but you know, it's part of like what lights you up in life. It's like now I have a passion as I you know, reach this pinnacle of aging as I get older and older.
Experience. Pinnacle of experience.
There you go.
As I understand that life happens and it just keeps happening. It's like embracing every moment and understanding that age is just a number. And I'm honestly feel better than I did when I was 30 and happier and healthier and really excited about my future in a better way. So, you know, if you want to be old, you can act old. If you want to be whatever, you know, I guess that's why I wear cool sneakers.
And we got to do an outfit of the day.
Oh yeah, we do
an outfit of the day. And you probably do those old.
Oh yeah. Well, I'll start.
I know we started talking about how you and Forbes connected, and I love learning more about how people connected and their journey together, because her and I we met when we were 21. We're also very up there in years and experience, we'll call it.
Yeah.
And we reached the pinnacle.
You're both younger than me.
We've reached the pinnacle of experience, or are reaching, I guess, actively. But can you talk a little bit more about your relationship and your partnership with Forbes? Because I feel like people come along in your life. And it's funny, as I was listening to you talk, I learn from her every day. Every single day she teaches me something. She's very wise.
Who's older?
She is 2 months. Way older. 2 months over here.
Way older. 2 months, way older.
2 months. She tells me for 2 months, old lady.
Yep.
But tell us more of your journey, because there is so much between you and Forbes. And Forbes is just one of my favorite people. But you've really taken a lot of...
charm you to work you over on this.
I know, right? I know.
Forbes is a unique individual, and he just kept showing up in my life. You know, he was a student of mine at Arizona State University, and I was teaching entrepreneurship innovation. He became an innovation fellow and a writer fellow. And during that, I always give my number out to all my students. I said, hey, call me if you want to start a business, if you want to do something. And I said, and I always say this, I say 95% of you will never call this number, or you will never call someone that says to ask for help. I go, the reality in life is that you have to ask for help. And if you're going to make anything, you'll ask for help. Well, it just goes like this journey of Forbes is that he called and he kept calling. And we started to build a relationship, and that's where it was symbiotic, because everyone took me very seriously. But as a child, I was very much, what I'd say is the class clown. And I became serious in a point of my life when I graduated college and I got my first job, and I was like, I got to be serious. And it transformed my identity and probably my belonging, my friends, and all these different things. And I long for this fact of just playfulness and life and everything. And as you get older, they're like, hey, I don't want to get older. I want to, like, how do I have this youth? So, you know, the fact is Forbes is 20 years younger than me. So he could be, you know, literally my son. He's, and in that we become best friends. And part of it is that he's brought this playfulness to my life, and I brought this seriousness and helped him really think about the professionalism of writing. And we've become, you know, in a way, we're very complementary. And what we learned in writing Exponential Theory or Reimagine Innovation or all these different things. And then, like I said, there's a bunch of other books along the way. And now we're writing on a screenplay.
And another book.
And I think all those things, you know, realizes that, you know, he does understand who I am and I understand who he is. We've, if you want to say fast forward, that's been, you know, roughly a 4 or 5 year journey. I met him probably 8 or 9 years ago, but he kind of disappeared and then came back into my life when he really needed me. And then in that process, we just really, you know, kind of had something to offer each other and started becoming friends. You know, honestly, as Venture Cafe, as you kind of start this off, the first thing that I said is, Forbes, just hang tight. I have the perfect role for you. And it was months in the making. Literally, it took a long time to launch Venture Cafe. And eventually I brought him in and he was there for the first week. And then ever since has been the host. And, you know, that was a role that he much better was suited for than I was ever or anybody else. And that was kind of part of me thinking, you know, how do you, I think it's also unconditional love. Like, I mean, I would literally say we, you know, have a bond for each other. Because, you know, when you go to work for someone and you look out for someone's other's intentions than yourself and you trust someone 100%, that's hard to find in the world. And, you know, I've been through a lot of different business partners that haven't always done well for me, as I imagine everyone has. And it's like, I have a sense that, you know, Forbes and I are kindred spirits for life, meaning like now writing a story about our journey is very reflective and very honest. Like we have some really raw and emotional conversations about relationships he had during that process and like what I thought and like, oh my God, you know, and it's just really reflective of relationships or dates or different things I've been in. Like we like break it down. And what we're really into is when you write a screenplay is that you think about all these interactions between people and you realize that, you know, people are rarely honest with themselves, beyond honest with the world about who they are. And you talked about Forbes being authentic. And I think that's what our screenplay is about, is how do you get to be authentic? How do you get to be real? And I think part of that process is you realize that everyone wants you to think or see yourself some way. And I think social media is part of this problem. It's like, oh, I want to filter this, you know, and it's like going on a dating site and like every, you know, every woman's filter. And you're like,
yeah,
okay, well, you know, you look like a cartoon. Like, I don't want to date a cartoon, you know? And then you go through and you have a conversation and it's like, it's always like, oh, she's getting on a jet. Well, I know she doesn't have a jet. You know, she works in the school system, you know? It's like, you know, and then you kind of like break it down more. And it's like, then you finally get to texting and then she's like telling you a story that she's so busy and all the, you know, it's like, in a way that it's become, okay, well, do I want to even spend time with it? And I think that's part of what social media has done is with compare culture and cancel culture and all these other negative things that happen in social media, it really has transformed society. So you have an online life and offline life. But
yeah,
what's interesting about Forbes is a younger generation, he's actually inspired me to be more offline because I owned a digital strategy firm for 15 years. So I've always been online, been very much a digital nomad and kind of worked online and been able to create my lifestyle from that. But Forbes himself is like, one, he won't answer. If you text him or email him or whatever, it'll take forever to get back because he's literally living life. And that inspires me. Like, it's like, how do you literally break from this connectivity where you have a real life? And I think that's part of our screenplay and that story that we're working on is, you know, we're both very different points of view from each other. And I think, you know, part of it, you know, and the guts of it, in 2020, I think the thing that I became very loyal is I had my own doubts. I was like, you know, and this has all changed for me and you'll get this, is I had these really doubts that like, does anyone care what I say? You know, and it's because there's so much noise out there. And I was writing this book, Exponential Theory, that was about innovation and this journey. And literally he was the one like, you know, let's just write it. Let's see what happens, you know, and obviously, there's a few people out there that care about what I say. And that built confidence that I didn't have coming into that. And that's also part of my health journey. It's part of mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual journey that he was a pivotal point because he's like, you know, and what I realized looking back on it was because he was like, if I don't write this book, I don't know what else I'm going to do. You know, and we've had that, and that's part of our screenplay. He's just like, I need this. So I need to inspire this guy to keep writing this book. So all of a sudden in that period, you know, he helped me build enough confidence to say, hey, people care about what you say. And then now I just can't shut up about what I want to say. So I mean, on stages making fun of, comedy of people having fun with the fact that how much, you know, change, and that's part of our kind of thing is like, how do you change? And you realize how resistant people are to change, even though it's, you know, literally sabotaging themselves. So that's been a big part of our own comedic journey to kind of make humor in the fact that the status quo is that everyone wants to stay in the status quo, even though they really want to be different.
Yeah.
But we all fall into this thing is like, well, I don't really want to be different. I just want to blend in. So then how are you going to ever make a difference? And I think that's what Forbes and I, if I could say anything, is we both agree we want to be different and we want to do something different. And that's build a bond and a friendship to say, how can I help you get there and vice versa? And we're on a journey together and just like you guys are. And
yeah,
it's like, we'll learn and grow together.
Yeah. And that's why I think really real relationships IRL in real life, you know, versus the relationships that you think you have with people who follow you on social media or commenting on things. But having a real relationship is where they see you. So we see each other. I would say I'm more on the emotional side. She's not. She needed to be more emotional.
Mm-hmm.
She needed to get in touch with her emotionals.
Yeah.
She could be like a robot. There was definitely a time in her life where she was much colder.
Yeah. And there's even still sometimes with the team where she's like, hey, you might want to like put a
little intimidating.
Yeah, you're a little intimidating. Just kind of like warm up a little bit because I'm just get down to business. And she's like, might want to.
Yeah. And I need to be a little more serious. So I definitely relate to everything that you're saying. And I feel like I've had a lot of relationships in life where people have said to me, whether it was like, you know, a friend or I mean, all types of relationships where they're like, you see people. You know, but I think we all see each other. You just have to stop and invest in that relationship. And everybody needs that. I need her to see me. She needs me to see her so that we can help each other grow and get back in touch with who we really are. Like you said, you used to be one way and then you felt you needed to start getting serious in life. And you're like, I want to get back to that guy that I was. Yeah. And like,
which is my authentic self, which is like, you know, living a life that you want to live versus. Like I was living a life for everyone else because I was serious. I was able to make money. Money's always been easy for me. And it's like everyone around me had this relationship where I was the patriarch, including my parents, including all my different friend groups, all my different businesses. I was always the decision maker. So, in a way it's like figuring out like, okay, how can I like let my guard down so I could actually be funny? And it's interesting. The relationship between Forbes and I is very symbiotic to that in the opposite way, which is Forbes literally, when I first met with him, he's like, I have no emotions. And like, I was very much not an emotional person, but I understood my emotions. And in fact, we were in an improv class. And I think it's funny. There was a woman that, you know, I guess you would consider her binary. So she came and she was teaching the class. And she said, Aaron, I don't want you to take offense to this. I don't want you to think this is sexist or ageist. And I'm like, okay, this
here
is
we go. Yeah.
I've pretty got
the setup.
And she said, you know, it's like for a middle-aged white man, she's like, you're not repressed. Like you really do understand your emotions and you're able to kind of deal with them. And like, I was like the biggest compliment of my life. And I really reflected on like, I think where I was in my life of understanding who I was, but it was also like an uncovering. I'll give this to Forbes is like, I was helping him deal with emotions. Because he literally, like in his own mind, like tricked himself into thinking that he didn't have emotions. Yet, as you know, Forbes is a very emotional person. But in his mind, he was just like, well, you know, I just went through life through the motions or whatever. And I think part of our authenticity journey is like, no, embrace the emotions, like live them. That's life. Like it's okay to be angry and upset. It's just like, don't sit in it forever. You know, it's like, understand what you need to learn and grow from that so that you can actually find a better self out of that. And I think we both, you know, and to that in your friendship, it's like we're both unpeeling an onion to say,
yeah,
how can we reach our potential? And, you know, I'll be honest, like we're, you know, in our minds, we're writing an Oscar winning screenplay and we're writing a New York Times bestselling book.
Oh, I know you guys.
That's exactly what I said. We're going to write a bestselling book, like all these different things. And he's just like, he didn't believe it. And I believed it. And lucky I had enough good energy and karma for the world that it happened.
And, for the both of you.
For the both of us. And, and now we're getting the fruits of that. But now it's the next step. It's like, how do we keep going?
Energy. Yeah.
Yeah. No, now I got to keep, I'm like holding back. I'm like, you actually got to do the work.
All good energy. He's just like a ball of like, it's so magnetic.
He's going to love this podcast. All about me.
He's renowned.
He's why I'm renowned.
That's
renowned because I'm Forbes Shannon's business partner. So it was on episode whatever.
I like what you said when you go, it's okay to feel the energy or feel the emotion, because that's what she taught me. There was a couple months ago and she was frustrated about something in the business. And she's like, this mother effing this and mother effing that. And I've got that look on my face that's like, you're really challenging my positive vibes right now. And she goes, I'm frustrated as a business owner. Sometimes you're going to be frustrated and I just need to feel frustrated for a minute. And I was like, okay. And then I realized that's all she needs for a little bit. And then we move on. But she's like, I need to feel it. So she still teaches. Like,
I feel what you feel towards Forbes. She's a gift from God. Absolutely. Like, I see a look come on her face and I'm like, oh, I'm doing that thing to her where she has to like, okay, I know what I need to be right now. Just need to be a sounding board. Don't say anything. Don't try to help her. Just you could see it on her face. She's just like, all right, I'm ready. Let's do this. Go ahead. Bring it on me. She does not feed into it. But she also has taught me that I bring the energy into the room. So when I bring the frustrated energy to the room, everybody jumps on board with me. They're like, oh, yeah. What the heck? I hate that. I'm pissed off too. And they weren't originally. So I have
tell
to
the story.
I have to tell the story. Okay,
so we're not outing anybody or any specific business.
No, we're outing everything. Come on, my fellow guys. After hours.
So it was, we've learned that Kristen is an energetic wave maker, right? And she just has this natural way of creating energy and people jump on it. And so it was one day and she's like, you know, frustrated, whether it was a client or an employee situation. And she was like, they need to go. They're fired. And then it was like, and Kennedy, our director of operations, also a partner in the business, Kennedy and I were like, yeah, they need to go. And then the very next day, she comes into work. She goes, you guys got to talk. And she was like, I was on the treadmill this morning and I just had this moment of serenity and I prayed about it. And she goes, you know, I really think that this, we can turn this around. And I really think that this is going to be a positive. Let's keep them. And we're like, okay, yeah, we can turn this around. Let's keep them. Let's put time into it. And later on in the day, I was like, and it's not like Kennedy and I don't have our own thoughts, you know, that we're just blindly following along. Not at all. But I just realized when she's excited, I'm excited. And when she's frustrated, I'm frustrated. So yeah, that's her energetic. I go, so you need to
fun with that.
Right? That's a lot of power in that. But anybody's ever told me that, but there's a lot of power in that. But I think part of as we've evolved the message from our first book, which we did talk about these kind of seven universal truths in our first book, Exponential Theory. And then in this next book, we really kind of boiled it down to truth, trust, and joy. And the reason is like when you tell yourself the truth, and this is like, one, thoughts are electric. So emotions are magnetic. So what you're talking about is like an emotional energy that you create, these waves of energy that all of a sudden people are getting emotional. It's like, okay, I just believe in what you say. What we realize is that we have our own truths, and our own truths are based on our own perspective of all the history and life that we've had, all the resentment, doubts, fears, trauma, drama, you know, self-talk, anything that's happened to us has filtered, anchored, and conditioned like who we are. And I think part of that truth is like, everybody's opinion in a group really becomes valuable when you start to listen and understand and trust. So truth, trust. So you trust other people's opinion, because trust is actually your intuition, which if you trust yourself, and this is where if you don't have truth, you can't trust yourself. And part of the trust is actually trusting that we're all connected by energy, you know, by, I'll say, quantum physics or whatever you want to say. It's like by an energy that we can't see or understand or anything. But right now we're sharing energy. So if I change the energy, I guarantee I could change the emotions of both of you, and vice versa. And I think that's what you're saying. But when we trust ourselves, then we realize that we go with our gut instinct, or we go with our heart, And we use these terms like, you know, very easily. And I think the third part of that is really joy. And joy is on consciousness beyond enlightenment and peace, which are beyond that. Joy is one of those feelings that we can actually describe and relate, which I think is gratitude. So what you're expressing is I have gratitude for, I trust my leader. I trust my, you know, in whatever situation it is, and that's your truth. But I think those three kind of stepping stones are kind of part of what we're writing a screenplay about, because in the end, when you have a mindset and you kind of think about who you are and what you believe is a growth mindset or a fixed mindset, and then you think about your habits, like these are all things about longevity as well as really about what we're writing on this new book, Fuck the Status Quo.
We got to get into that.
That really goes into it. And then it's about mindset. Then it's about the stories you tell yourself, which is your inner story, the story you tell the world. And then it's about what you focus on. Those are what things you control. You absolutely control all those things. What we always focus on are the things we don't control. Mm-hmm. Like the, you know, someone else's behavior, someone else's energy, someone else's, whatever is happening in the real world, all these things that are happening. When we realize is that when we can shape the world by what we control, our thoughts and our habits and how we spend our time, how the stories we tell ourselves and tell the world. And when we tell ourselves the story and we tell the world and they become one, then we become authentic. And that's like the real secret to life is like, and it really is this raw, unfiltered, you know, we had this conversation before we got on. It's like, it's this raw, unfiltered, like, you're not going to get anything different from me in another conversation. It's just going to be like, okay, I'm going to make mistakes and I'm going to learn from them and grow from them. And that's my process, my model. And in that, it's like getting to, okay, what do I want to focus? Well, I want to focus on people that are meaningful and that want to create like significant exponential, you know, and I'll use exponential theory, like exponential change in the world. And I think it's part of Forbes and I Bond is we wrote a whole book about it and we brainwashed ourselves, if you want to put it that way, is like, hey, we're going to change the world. And then all of a sudden, when you have that belief system and that values and that attitude, which in mindset, that goes into what you can control. Now I can control those things. Now when we say we're going to write a screenplay, all of a sudden people from different places start showing up and you're like, that's magical.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then it's even for, you know, Forbes and we just had this conversation. She's like, I feel like I'm living a dream. Like he literally texted me last night, I feel like I'm living a dream. And I go, that's what living is. Because we're literally dreaming up whatever we possibly can dream to kind of create the life that we want. The people that don't believe that are right as well. And they live in whatever, you know, world they live in. And I think that's the biggest part is as we see the world sees us, you know, to think is to create, we are our habits, you know, have all these things that are built in exponential theory that kind of go through the new book. But the goal of the new book is that, you know, big media, big pharma, big food, all these different things are not necessarily working for your individual benefit. They're working to control your mindset so that you kind of continue to buy their products and everything. And as someone that owned a digital strategy firm that worked with Coca-Cola, Google, all these big brands, I realized that, you know, their goal is to keep you in the status quo. You know, Coca-Cola as a brand, if you really think about it, their whole marketing is nostalgia because right now Coca-Cola is not in favor, but hey, let me anchor you into your childhood when Coke was really in favor. Mm-hmm. And let me anchor in when you got that bottle of ice cold Coca-Cola and you drank it, what was the emotions you had with that? And that's the continued process that as we get distance from that, we realize Coca-Cola has now become a water company. They've acquired Smart Water, Dasani, I mean, all these different water companies, they literally sell more water than they do carbonated drinks. And that's part of that process is like this growth of people enlightened to understand what's good for them and not good for them. And that nostalgia doesn't necessarily anchor in me in to drink a Coca-Cola. Now, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of people drinking Coca-Cola. Mm-hmm. But what they need to do is become aware of why they're drinking Coca-Cola. And I think that's part of writing a screenplay and everything is like, you start to say, well, why do I do this? And why do we have this mm-hmm. conversation? And, you know, all those different things. And I think that's also a deeper bond between Forbes and I because we've learned and grown on so many different subjects because we've written about pretty serious things. But then we make fun of them and laugh about them and kind of heal from them and kind of get over them. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Mind blown. Yeah. And when you, I love this idea of like, it sounds like a central theme of the book of just connecting to the why behind everything that you do, because I just had this conversation with somebody yesterday. We've had this at length where you have these people around in your life and you want more for them than they want for themselves. And that we have, and her and I have done this even professionally with people we've interacted with professionally, where we actually want more for them or their business or their life than they want for themselves. And it's been hard for us. It's been hard for us to take a step back and realize, no, they're just on their own path. What we need to focus on is what we're doing and what we need and what brings us joy and what our why is in everything we do, and not do something, her and I, whether it's a client or a project or expansion of whatever, you know, there's chapters for her and I after this business that we've already talked about, things we want to do on the philanthropic level. And just always making sure, though, that we continue to ask ourselves, why are we doing this? What is the purpose behind this? Because I have no doubt that is why people make obscene amounts of money, finally reaching the pinnacle of financial, and they're not happy because they don't have any traction as to why they did the things that they chose to do.
Well, I think you're exactly right. And I think it's, and, you know, I go through the same frustration because I wrote a book about thinking big. So when you want everyone to think bigger, the challenge is that most people aren't up for the challenge. And I would say this to all your listeners. It's like, how do you learn and grow from everything that happens in your life? And that's part of my own journey is like, yeah, you can look at everything as obstacles, or is it an opportunity for me to learn and grow? Like, why it was presented to me is to learn and grow. And it's like, how do I think bigger from that? And then honestly, when you start thinking bigger, what you realize is that all these small problems that people were focused on, and like, I'm just not focused on those small problems. And then it's hard to kind of relate to people that are, you know, in small talk or focused on small problems.
Yeah, just experience even with some family members of ours.
Yeah, it's a, you know, I have a, you know, the same with my family members that just don't understand me. Like, well, why do you want to make an impact on the world? Like, it's like, why do you think you can do that? You know, and it's like, okay, I don't need to hang out with them because they're not going to help me kind of think bigger about myself. But I think it's also part of just
make that sound really easy, but it's not, right?
No, not at all.
And you want them to see things the way that you see them because you feel that joy that you talked about, and you see that they don't experience that joy in their life.
And all you can do is share your, you know, and I call it exponential mindset, belief, and attitude. It's like, you can only share that with them as like, hey, and I go through this as like what you control, what you influence, and what you impact. Which is part of the new book, and it really is kind of telling of people is like, most people feel like they don't control anything and that the world is just spinning out of control. And then once you realize, and that's the beauty of, you know, we created this thing called the Change Agents Academy, that the people have gone through it, you know, they're like, oh wow, I do control these things. And then all of a sudden it's like very empowering and it's very refreshing. It's like, oh, all these other outside things don't influence that at all. That's all in here. And the other thing is, you know, to relate to your podcast, Inspired Vibe, is, you know, there are no answers outside of us. We have all the answers inside of us. And I don't say that lightly as someone who's probably for the most of my life taken education because I didn't think I was good enough and I thought I needed more. And that story is in Exponential Theory is like, I literally had a flunked English, you know, and then I become a best-selling author, right? And that was the inspiration. You know, some people don't get inspiration from something negative happens that could have just, you know, spun me down a road where I was in heating and air conditioning the rest of my life and not really making an impact on the world, but just doing a job to kind of fulfill that life. Now it's like, how do I inspire people on a level, on a systemic level? And it is because this English teacher, you know, if I think of it as it was fuel for the fire, it was like, how does any obstacle or something that happens to me that's negative, because we all are going to have negative things. Like, that's the reality of life. It doesn't mean billionaires, whatever it is, doesn't, you know, they all had negative things. They just use it as fuel, where other people are like, they use it as an excuse. And we can be a victim, or we can literally be like, how do I create my world? And I think, you know, the part of it is right now I'm in the most creative stage of my life. And like Colonel Sanders, who started Kentucky Fried Chicken at 67, I didn't start, but I am literally just on time. I am perfectly where I need to be. And life has happened to where I've literally been able to manifest and understand the world in a way that I have a very unique perspective. And I do want to share it. And I do think it'll make an impact on a lot of people because I've seen it through my academy. You know, hundreds of people have graduated from our academy and literally changed their lives overnight. And it surprises me. It's just mind-boggling where they actually use, in a way, this curriculum they're writing in this book in a better way than I ever used it. I'm like, wow, you know, how did you figure out how to do it like that, you know, and just take the, you know, the speed train to success. And I've seen it over and over again, and including with Forbes, you know, he's literally living out his dreams right now. And, you know, in a way he's bringing me along in those dreams. And that's exactly what I told him. I was like, hey man, I know you want to be my chief of staff, which he was a terrible chief of staff. For all of you out there, never hire Forbes Shannon as a chief of staff. But I said, dude, the world would serve better is what's your purpose? What's your ikigai, which is an exercise that we do. And I was like, just live that, man. And that will serve me better. And now I'm writing a screenplay and, yeah, you know, likely to be on TV next year with that. And I mean, there's just amazing things going on because people are living their purposes. And if I can surround everyone, including you two and including our cast here with the smiley faces and flower shirts, you know, then we can, you know, inspire people to say, like, what is our purpose and passion? You know, that's all there is to life. Like, there's nothing else. Like, I'll be honest, I've made a lot of money in my life. And the money, the more and more money you make, the more and more you're like tied to the money. And I think the more and more you want to go create and live the life that you want to live, and you realize, like, hey, I'm standing for what my truth, my trust, and, you know, what brings me joy. You know, even money doesn't bring anyone joy. You know, it serves a purpose as a calculation. And sure, you need a certain amount of money to kind of live. But there gets to a place where it's just like, let me inspire other people. Let me have fun with life. And that's where I'm at, where we have a comedy show and a screenplay and I'm on podcasts all the time. And I just have fun. You know, it's cool.
I'll come in. Both have questions at the same time. Change Agents Academy. So who, first of all, how do you find out about that? Like, how do you attract who is ideal for those classes? Or do you just put it out there and just say, hey, it's there if you need it?
It's an interesting thing because what I've learned with it is, in reality, it's all we can talk about all this we want. Everybody wants, says they want to change. When it comes down to it, they don't want to change. And that's what the book Status Quo is about. That's why I'm writing a book, Fuck the Status Quo, because in, and I know that's like beep the status quo, right? So
always has our back.
Yeah. Beep button.
In writing that, what I learned in Change Agents Academy is a good portion of people that sign up to do it, as soon as they get anything that's potentially hard to make them change, they just bail. And then there's another people, you know, there's been literally thousands of people signed up, but hundreds of people have graduated, over 100 people have graduated, like a couple hundred people. Now, those people have taken the course again and again because they realize, like, okay, these exercises are helping me think about the world a different way.
Wow.
And that literally is helping them get to authenticity of who they want to be. And it's about challenges. There's an exercise, a Japanese exercise called Ikigai that's from Blue Zones, but it's also beyond that. It's like, how do you find your purpose beyond work? And it's in reality, that's what we should all find. We should all just love life because we're doing things that are purposeful and impactful to other people. And it's why people that get money, there's all these studies, you know, I can give you money, you go spend it on yourself and you're like momentarily happy. If you go spend it on other people and you give it away or you do some philanthropy or whatever, like those people have long lasting happiness. Like, you know, there's all these different things. And what you realize is like paying it forward and giving. And that's what the Change Agent Academy is about. It's like, hey, let's enroll some people, change agents or enroll other change agents. And what's real, the reality of that, it didn't happen. And this is interesting. It's a failure in a sense that it did grow, but I wanted to create a million change agents. And I used to talked about it on lots of podcasts and I had the business model, but people in the reality are so complacent to where they're at and so anchored in to all their trauma and drama. They don't want to let that go because right now it serves something for them. Doesn't serve them well. But it serves something like to hold on to it to say, hey, if I talk about this, this is my excuse for not being successful, for not doing that thing that everyone thinks I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, the interesting part, it led me to writing a book like, okay, there's more powers at play that help push people to be kind of just ordinary or normal or the status quo. And then all of a sudden, it's like, how do you be extraordinary? How do you be you know, how do you think of yourself bigger and all those different things? And that's what this book is about, because as I started thinking about it, what's interesting is my life just got bigger. All of a sudden, like, you know, I'd say it, but a president of a country I was on the phone today with a governor of Puerto Rico, with, you know, just crazy things happening that I never thought would happen. Just because I think bigger. And like, people are like, I want to be around someone that thinks bigger. And the people that want to be around people that think bigger are generally like family offices that are managing billions of dollars. Like, how do I get everyone else to think bigger?
Yeah.
And that's what exponential theory has done for me, is it's surrounded me with people that want to think big. Now I'm, you know, on a board of a healthcare system in Vail, Colorado. I'm on the board of a stem cell company in Costa Rica. I'm an advisor to Blue Zones, which are all interests of mine on longevity. And then I'm working with Damon John at Shark Tank and doing all these different things. And that's how I make money. But it's all just by me kind of thinking bigger, where I'm still living my passions every day. I'm doing exactly what I want to do and literally bringing to the table kind of my own authentic self, which most people just want my opinion on how to think big, which I don't know that I have the best opinion on how to think big, but people are willing to pay me for it. So if there's any of you out there that want to pay me for thinking big, tune in, connect with Inspired Vibe. We'll kind of connect through them and we'll go from there.
There we go. I do want to ask about everything you talked about with being authentic and what manifesting is to you. Because I watched a video a few months ago where Conor McGregor was doing a post-fight interview. And the reporter, one of the reporters, you just kind of hear the audio, and they have it focused on him. He won the fight. And the reporter said, last Thursday, 3 days ago, I asked you how this fight was going to go. And he repeated punch by punch, second by second, how the fight was going to go. And the reporter did back to Conor, which is exactly how it did. And Conor won the fight. And Conor's response was something like, it was so good. He said, I have the courage to say what I want in this life. Most people don't. I'm clearly paraphrasing whatever he said. And I thought that was, I thought that was so significant, because it's funny when you sit down, and I've experienced this myself, and I've manifested crazy things in my life. I still do on a daily basis. I have to watch my thoughts because what I can call in. But when I, first off, I want to write it down, I have to go through sort of this reprogramming piece of myself, where, because I go to write it down and I go, when I write that down, is this realistic, right? Do I deserve this? Whatever that narrative. And then for me then to go tell someone like my best friend or my mom or someone who's very close, right, that I would share the deepest, darkest secrets of myself with, I still take a second and I hesitate before I say that. So what's the difference between, or what's the connection, I should say, between the authenticity and manifesting to you?
Well, they're one and the same. And I think that's where, when you're authentic, you actually share what you want and you don't back off of that. So like, in reality, like what Conor McGregor has done for his life, and if you know his story, I mean, he was, you know, him and his wife were like broke, didn't have anything, and kind of said like, hey, this is what I'm going to do. And, you know, most partners would be like, okay, you're crazy. And like, you can't do that. We need to, you get a job, whatever, like bring you back to reality. And what reality is what your mind can create. If you realize is that this world is just, you know, a creation of your own mind, like how you live through this, is literally just how you think about the world and how you look at it. As you see the world sees you.
It's like your own simulation.
We're totally... You know, I don't want to go that we're in simulation, but we are in a simulation in our own mind. And if we believe we can do something, and we have, and that's why I say exponential mindset, belief, and attitude, because if all of a sudden you have an exponential mindset, belief, and attitude, then everything becomes possible. And what you do is you tune out all the naysayers. In fact, they give you energy. Like the English teacher in high school gave me energy to end up writing a book and literally becoming a writer, writing articles all the time and everything, where it's like, you know, understanding that a thought, and this is what I want to say, is most people, like, law of attraction is like to think is to create. So if you have a thought, and I just want to put it out there, as a synapse is electrical, so it connects. And I talk about this book because I've gone deep on neuroscience to understand how the brain works, because I think it's the most it's beyond comprehensible. And I would even say this is like our brains, and this is where we always talk about artificial intelligence changing our world. And I do a lot in artificial intelligence. Our brains are so advanced artificial intelligence, right? In the way that it's nuanced and the way that we think and the depth of it, because we don't think of emotions and all these different things in a way that are real. Our brain is so nuanced that we're literally, when we put a thought out, we start creating energy. The magnetic part is really the emotion. And I call emotion, which is electricity in motion, which it's not mine, but it's like all of a sudden you put a thought out there, but it's the magnet to say, I really desire this, or I believe that I have it. The problem is most people, and it's kind of like what you just said, is like, would then go and say, well, you know, I want a new Porsche 911. I don't really need a new Porsche 911. Well, then the universe corresponds. You don't. You know, and I think that's the constant battle why people kind of get stuck in the situation they are. And it's not so much, and I've learned this from a business partner of mine, Will Lamb of Upgrade, who would be a great guest on your show. He built this kind of mind reprogramming system that I've been through. It's like $1 million-plus program. And part of it is, and he works with CEOs all over the country that then create $1 billion, you know, because they start thinking. And it's think of it this way, as your mind is a computer, but think of it as a supercomputer, but think of it as a quantum computer. So if you know what quantum computing is it's infinite in nature. Like a computer is zeros and one, a quantum computer is like these qubits that are infinite in their choices and options they can do. Now I won't get all nerdy out on you, but then all of a sudden, think of your brain as it has an operating system, has a bunch of applications in it. And those applications have been programmed throughout your life to get you to where you are right now today. Those applications are, most of them are trauma, limiting beliefs, regrets, self-talk. And they're systems that shame, guilt, all these things that when something happens, you're like, I'm going to go right back into that. And you're in a loop, which is in computer programming is what happens when a computer program breaks. Well, our minds break in the sense that we become so with cognitive biases and belief systems of ourselves that we can't do that anymore. And I have an analogy in the new book, as well as in some comedy that I talk about a red wagon, is when we were 5 years old, we had freedom in all the world to go create whatever we wanted. We had a red wagon. It was completely empty. We could go out in the world and do whatever we wanted to do. Well, then all of a sudden some stuff happened. And then you're going to have to leap this out. Shit happens and then you dump it into the red wagon. And then throughout life, by the time you're a teenager, the red wagon's overfilling. It's like someone said, you're not good enough. You're not going to do this. You're ugly. You're not going to make the team, whatever it is. And you just believed it. And it becomes a limiting belief that you start building a box around you that's carrying this heavy now red wagon that you're still carrying through life. And it smells. But you hit a ball.
There's a lot of shit in it.
It has a lot of shit in it. Beep, beep. And when the shit falls out, instead of you stop and you're like, I can't let that shit go. I need to pick that up and put it back in. That's important to my story. And the reality of rebuilding a supercomputer where instead of having limiting beliefs is that you start to let that go and you start to literally tell a new story to yourself. Why did that happen? What did you need to learn and grow from that? And then it becomes like, how do I get limiting beliefs to be limitless beliefs? Meaning like, okay, this happened to me to give me the reason why I could do anything. Like failing in English as a junior in high school for me became, I was determined to be a best-selling author. Now, it took me a long time, but I made it happen. And I think part of that is now I am a writer, like literally paid by magazines and literally writing books and different things, screenplays and all these different things. And part of that was a belief system that, am I good enough? Am I worthy? Well, once you actually reprogram that electrical thought to say I am, and then you have the motion that you believe it, you stop doubting it. You stop having fear, anxiety, worry, stress, doubts about the future. And it's all about growth. And the reality is all of us on this planet, every one of us, are literally going through life for the first time. That we know. Some of us, if you want to use compare culture, you could say are doing better than others. But in reality, we're all exactly where we need to be to learn what we need to do. And ultimately, at every moment in our life, like this moment is the most important moment of your life, whether you know it or not, because there's no other moment in your life that you control. is to say, where is my life going to go? Where am I going to grow? What am I going to create? And when you realize that, then every moment becomes really valuable. And then you say, well, how do I want to spend this moment? And who do I want to spend it with? And all of a sudden you start making decisions about who are your five closest friends. And you realize, okay, those people don't serve me well. How do I find better friends? And that's part of the journey, is finding the people that support you in your wild and crazy dreams. Because as I wrote in Exponential Theory, most every idea that changed the world, people thought was crazy, stupid, and would never happen. And I think part of that is just your own belief system, is how do you reprogram yourself and reprogram everybody around you to believe and believe in themselves? And that's what I've been doing with change agents. And that's why we have, you know, I can say I'm in an exponential journey of change, because I've shared a model. That's my model. There's hundreds of models that work. It's not like my model is the only model. There's many different ways to do it. It's just, I've now found a way that I can share and communicate it, and people are believing it. And all that really matters is that they then believe in themselves, that they can actually do that change emotionally. Mm-hmm. And then when you're emotionally invested in it, then you take the actions, and what ends up happening, and if you think about all these exponential leaders, yes, stuff's going to get in your way. Obstacles are different things. But then those are just like, well, what I need to learn from this to accelerate that growth. And then what you realize is the more failure you have, and we don't like to use that. I don't use that. It's the more mistakes or learning, you know, you either learn or grow. Is when you make that mistake or something fails, it's like, how do I take this, not do it again, and how do I accelerate? Well, there comes a point where you get to a certain age, you've had a lot of experience to say, okay, now that I learned this, now I can accelerate. And now it's like I'm on that exponential curve, and I'm finally hitting that place that like my world is going exponential. And that's where I see myself in crazy conversations, like pinching myself, like, okay, I cannot believe this happened today. And I'm like, I cannot wait to wake up tomorrow to see what happens then.
Yeah. You said the more failure you have, you didn't finish it.
The more failure you have, the faster you're going to make success. I mean, the reality is...
Inspired vibe is on a rough.
Failure is a mistake. Just don't make the same mistake.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
Its reality is to recognize is like, you know, whatever happened was for you to learn and grow. And I think that's where oftentimes we have relationships. We're like, okay, why'd we spend all that time? Well, no, you had to learn whatever you needed to do. I mean, so... And then honestly, looking back is like, there are no regrets. Like when you get at that point, and honestly, I do a lot of work on this and like really serious conversations around trauma and different things and things that are far beyond my comprehension that people have been through, you know, that I'm like, you know, what did you learn and grow from that? And what would you avoid, you know, and there comes a point when you can laugh at it. And I think that's it'll bring back Forbes into this conversation as part of our comedy is, you know, if you can laugh at the biggest traumas in your life, And you think people hold that trauma, and you realize like, well, what power are you giving people when you give them that trauma and that holds over you? That you can like, okay, how can I move past this? And how can I actually understand what did I learn and grow from this? And then what can I teach other people? And then what can I accelerate my life from it? Then you have a totally different mindset. It's not a growth mindset. It's an exponential mindset. And then you go far beyond what you ever expected because nothing holds you back. That person, whoever did whatever, believe karma and all that, that it's holding them back more than it's holding you back. And in the end, you're going to get to where you want to go as long as you don't let other people get in your way. And I think that's the change model of what do you control? It's like, let's, you know, you control a lot more than you think. It's just a lot of times we focus on like other people. We don't control any other people. Like,
or we focus on what other people think.
Right.
Like, I think my key takeaway from the Conor McGregor situation was that 3 days before he stood in the same room of essentially the same room of reporters and punch by punch, blow by blow, said how it was going to go. And every single person in that room probably rolled their eyes and was like, there goes Conor doing his thing again, like talking out of his ass. Beep. And then 3 days later, now he's having the conversation post it going the way that he said it was going to go. And so my takeaway from that is, you have to say what you want for your life and be authentic and just silence the rest of the room. It may be before when everybody's looking at you going, right. We have a thing we call it Range Rover Day. You want to hear about Range Rover Day?
Yeah.
I know we got to wrap this up, but we'll wrap this up with Range Rover Day because we've never said it on air. So it's good for it. And now we're really putting energy out to it if we're going to put it on the podcast. But we've said for, I don't know, a year, year and a half, we came up with one day, we were like, one day there's going to be a day in this business where Kristen and I are going to be in our office together. We're going to know it's the day. We're going to look at each other and go, it's Rage Rover Day. And we're going to drive ourselves.
Well, it's not far. It's not far. Like, I want to be nothing closer. You guys have to call me up. I want to help you negotiate this deal for the Range Rover.
We will call you.
I'll call you. Yeah. And we're going to go buy two matte black Range Rovers. We look at them all the time now when we see matte black ones. We see them. Yeah. So we have this thing that we're going to do inside of it. And we're just going to know it's going to be a day. There's going to be something that's happened or a series of things that have happened. And we're going to say, it's Range Rover Day.
So here's my challenge. Okay, now that I've heard this, and I use Conor McGregor as the learning mechanism. Like, Conor McGregor had the thought enough to say, here's how the fight's going to go. And he played it out in his mind. But then he emotionally believed that that's how it was going to happen. And I think that's the important part is most people have thoughts. I want this. I need this. You have these words that are of lacking, of not having. And it's not like affirmations. Like, affirmations can get you a certain way. And like, I don't, there's nothing wrong with affirmations. And if you believe it, it'll get you there. It's the fact that he has the emotion is like, he is feeling exactly how it's going to end. And he actually is feeling like in the result of winning that and what it does for him and all the training. And he's recognizing that all this training has gotten me to here and I'm feeling this on the other side. So then his actions are to follow through on those emotions. And reality of the world is he doesn't have a reality that differs from that. Now, the other person who doesn't necessarily have the emotional connection to that moment, and this is to your law of attraction or manifestation, and it's where I have crazy things every day happen. But he literally is seeing that happen, and he's literally saying, I'm going to have to explain this at the press conference, and knows it. And that's where when you start to realize how Elon Musk talk or Bill Gates, and whether you like people or not, or it doesn't really matter, you realize that they're manifesting their world because they're putting out exactly what's going to happen. Whether they should or not, is the masses like, oh, you know, and they're going to disagree and say, oh, that's, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's even like Conor McGregor, well, what arrogance, you know, and sometimes it's seen as arrogance, but in reality, he's just manifesting his world. And you know, he's done some incredible things, and there's hundreds of people that every day are doing that, thousands of people around the world. And I think it's part of that as you get better and better and in tune with that, then your actions create those results. And if you believe it, and there's no one else that believes it more, then you create those results. And in particular, in a fighting situation where it's about belief against one other person,
yeah,
you know, it'll be interesting about Mike Tyson and Jake Paul. Like, you know, I have no idea what will end up happening, but it is a belief. It is literally a mind game more than it is a physical game. And you kind of see that playing out because it doesn't make sense. But what you realize is whatever happens, it's because of a belief system that made that happen. And I think that's part of any entrepreneur, any innovator, anyone CEO, any person out there in the world that wants to kind of create their world, or matte black Range Rover Day, which I can't wait for you guys to call me because I don't live very far. I could come over. I actually know the people over there. I can probably help you with that deal. We'll have to find two matte black Range Rovers. That might be the most difficult part, or we'll have to get them painted or something. But I think my challenge would be, I don't know when this episode is coming out. Is it that happens before this episode comes out? Look at how uncomfortable you got. Oh, they got uncomfortable on that.
Out in here. This was so good. And we should have made, every time someone says Forbes, a drinking game.
Yeah.
And we have to have you both on. We have to have you both on.
But, oh, because shoot. More time.
Yeah. We need more time with both of you.
Yeah. Because I wanted to talk more about the failure thing. I'll just say it really quickly. I feel like I had a light bulb go off recently because where our business is moving so fast that we keep trying new things. And every time we try new things, we fail. And I got this feeling at one point going, ah, dang it, we failed at that. And so why do we keep failing? And I thought, wait a minute, I didn't fail again at the same thing. I failed at something new. So, and we keep moving forward and we grow and we learn how to, what not to do. We learn so much from every single failure. And I do call them failures. Maybe I shouldn't. But what I realized
You should reprogram that. Yeah. There's a couple things.
Please.
Can I coach you right here, right now?
Yeah, but I was just, you get what I'm saying, though. What I realized, the light bulb that went off was like, oh, I'm failing because I'm trying something new, not because I'm failing at the same thing over and over again. You know,
okay, so the key word there is trying.
Yeah.
Why is keyword trying? Anybody know?
There is no try.
Yoda, right?
Yes.
Yes. So have you ever had anyone, do you ever experience that?
What do you mean?
I don't know if it's good for a podcast, but like if you hold your arm out, and we can do this after the podcast, but when you say the word try, you're not committed to anything. You're committed to failure. And the reality is, I say you learn or, you know, either learn or win. And when you learn or win, then things become much easier to like understand. Like, but when you're trying things, you're actually committed to failure because you're like, I'm just going to try this. I'm not committed to it. And, but when you say, I'm committed to making this change or this happen, and you believe it, then you get emotional about it. When you say, I try, it's like this weak electrical signal that says, and I can show you, like, if you hold your arm out, I can literally show you try when it, okay. Say, I'll try to hold my arm up. Say it out loud.
I'll try to hold my
arm up. Keep saying it.
Try to hold my arm up.
Okay. Pretty weak, right? I'm not hurting your shoulder, right?
Okay.
Now say, I will.
I will hold my arm up.
Say it.
I'm going to hold my arm up. I'm holding my arm up.
Yeah. You feel the difference?
Yes.
Now you guys should try that. Everyone at home should find someone to try that because I think the point of that is language is a commitment. Yeah. And when we go through life and we try things, then we're not committed to them. And I think it's like, hey, I'm going to try to make this relationship work. Right there, and this is the unfortunate part of being someone who's aware or conscious, is you know that that relationship, if someone's telling you that, you know that that's not going to work. Hmm. It's just like, say, if I walk to each one of you in a bar, and I'll give you an example, and I say, hey, can I get your number? You know, and you give me, you know, I give you my number, and you say, oh, I'll try to call you back. What you really realize subconsciously is you're never going to call me back. But in real life, that's like that subconscious conversation that are like, oh, I got a chance. It's like Dumb and Dumber. Like, I got a chance. But
one in a million.
One in a million.
So you're saying
I got a chance. In reality, Miss Samsonite was not going to make that happen. But that's life, right? That's, and what we don't realize is we avoid the conversations that don't serve us well. But I think that's the biggest thing is we often use things that we know don't serve us well. And try, can't, and but are, like, my kids can say cuss words. They're BCTs. They're not allowed to say buts, can'ts, and tries. And it's changed their programming to say, okay, how do I commit to the life I want versus like, give me some wishy-washy language, shoulda, coulda, woulda, sorta,
yeah,
all those different things that all of a sudden you're not committed to kind of creating the outcomes you want. And that physical exercise is a great one because it'll really rewire you fairly quickly to say, oh, okay, I don't use that. In all the companies I have, and part of the success of selling 12 companies is I have a BCT jar that you put $5 in if you say the word can't and $1 for B for buts and tries. Mm. And in a month, pretty much everyone eliminates BCTs. And then we always throw a party with whatever that money is.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's awesome. So
well, that kind of actually made me feel good in a different way. And that's because I actually felt shame because I did commit to something that I failed to or that I failed at. Like, if I'm like, hey, we're doing this thing, we're going to change this thing in our business and we're going to do it. And I'm so committed. I am emotionally attached to it. So then when it fails, then I do feel shame because I pulled everybody into that. But then I have to talk myself down from that and say, no, we learned from it. We're going to adjust and we're going to refine and we're going to take what we learned and we're going to improve.
And what helps in those situations,
but I still feel the shame,
is
if that made me feel better.
She does.
Should not feel the shame. It's all about learning and growing.
She shouldn't. And the other thing that helps in those situations is when every single time, I mean, there is a history of 50 things that I can bring up that when something didn't work in this company, it's because it was leading to a infinitely better situation. It happens every single time. So when she gets like that, she's like, oh my God. I go, wait, no, the good stuff is coming. It's going to be even better than what we originally had planned.
So that's why you're partners, because that belief system serves you both well. It's like whatever, you know, this is whatever mistake happens, it unfolds something better. And if you believe that, that's where you realize like the journey I've been on. So it's taken longer than someone else to get to where I'm at. And yeah, I've spent lots of money doing things that didn't work, and I've made lots of money. But it all comes back to is like, are you happy now? Because that's all that matters. And are you doing something that matters to other people? And are you impacting, and whether it's just impacting each other as an entrepreneur? And I always, as entrepreneur in residence, said, you know, I've spent a lot of time, you know, people ask me questions about being an entrepreneur. I'm like, well, if you're a solo entrepreneur, you're making an economic impact for your family and for yourself. You know, as you start to hire people, you start to become exponential. And what you don't realize is like, what is society? If we want to improve society, we help people become more independent, have a mindset, belief, attitude, so they can go kind of create the world they want to create. Whatever it is, like, I would never think that I'm writing a screenplay now that is likely to be on Netflix next year and do things that are just outside of my comfort zone. And part of that is my own belief system to say I could do that. And, you know, it's part of a kid that's 20 years younger than me that inspired me to do that because, you know, I wanted to have that. And I think that's also to understand is things come from unlikely places. And you just got to realize is the most likely place you think you're going to succeed and you think that, hey, we're going to do this and this is going to happen. What's going to happen is going to come from somewhere else. And you just got to be open to it and aware that opportunities come from everywhere.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
I know we need to wrap
this is the last thing.
Oh, no. You have a last thing?
I know. The last thing.
The last thing is
the last thing. The last thing that I was going to say about Forbes.
One more about Forbes.
We're Forbes. We're gonna... You think we got a crush on Forbes?
Was that he said specifically, I go, because he manifests things, and I go, what's the number one takeaway from all this crazy stuff that has happened in your life in the last 60 days? And he says, it comes, but it never comes the way that you expected it to. Never comes the way that you fully realized it, that was going, that you'd imagined it.
And you said what matters is, are you happy now? And we're so happy and we're so grateful. And you seem very happy.
Yes.
And grateful. So cheers to that.
Yeah. And thanks for coming on.
Air cheers.
Aaron, how do people find you? How do people find you and follow you?
AaronBarre.com. AaronBarre.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Thanks for being on our
podcast.
That's a wrap for today's journey on Inspired After Hours. We hope our conversations have offered you unique insights and ignited your own aspirations. Remember, every story we share is a beacon of wisdom meant to inspire your own path. Stay with us as we continue to delve into the lives of successful leaders. Subscribe to stay tuned and join us next time on Inspired After Hours. Until then, stay inspired.